I'm Afshin Ratansi and welcome to a special online edition of Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the heart of the Middle East. The tide is shifting in Washington's proxy war on Moscow. Trump is now openly negotiating with Moscow, signalling a break from the relentless escalation that defined Genocide Joe's foreign policy. Indeed, for years, those who dared to expose NATO's role in pushing us towards nuclear confrontation have been silenced, deplatformed, demonetized, and blocked outright. This program, among others, was scrubbed from YouTube for telling the truth. And now the same censorship extends to those calling for an end to Israel's genocide in Gaza, with U.S. weapons raining down on Palestinian civilians, protesters, journalists, and dissidents around the world are smeared as anti-Semites, Nazis, and terrorist sympathizers. One of the voices behind Going Underground's fight to speak the truth is Farhan Ahmed, our head of social media. He built our YouTube channel to 33 million views before it was wiped out and continues to battle the digital censors and gatekeepers. He joins me now from an undisclosed location. Farhan, thanks so much for coming on the special edition. I mean, you've overseen the media strategy, social media strategy, during one of the most heavily censored periods in modern geopolitics. Has it got better, specifically over the proxy war in Ukraine, the US proxy war in Russia through Ukraine, or not much to talk about? Of course, we've got Trump and we've got X. I'm not sure about the other social media platforms.
Oh, it's night and day between the Trump era and the Biden era. The Biden era was draconian McCarthyism on steroids. You could not say a single thing which went against the official Washington State Department narrative or the narrative from London or Brussels. Anything with any shred of realism, any opinion which opposed this eventual slaughter of hundreds of thousands, if not millions, was completely censored, weren't allowed to say. And what was worse is the media environment became a complete echo chamber, everyone cheerleading on the same policy with no room for any sort of opposition, no room for any real analysis of it. Obviously, in the Trump era, now that we have DNI Tulsi Gabbard, now that we have JD Vance, these people are saying the same things that we had been saying all along. And that should show you that censorship doesn't work, because all of the voices that were saying all of this stuff got pushed to the so-called fringes of the internet. And then under the Biden era, I mean, you see people like Alex Jones, you see people who are close to Trump, who are show hosts and podcasters and that kind of thing. They all grew in these corners of the internet, and like an avalanche in 2024 before the election, these views all became mainstream. So it has become better over the last couple of months, for sure, on Russia and Ukraine, which is pretty much, it's not being pro-Russian or pro-Ukrainian, it's just literal common sense and seeing the reality on the ground and acknowledging it. And that is finally being done. So that's at least the first positive.
But of course, specifically with X, we don't really know. I don't. Maybe you can tell me how our social media is seen in NATO Western European countries. Because I know you're growing the Rumble numbers for us, because the Google contractor who owns YouTube, government, U.S. government contractor, hasn't got the memo from J.D. Vance. What is the censorship in Western Europe's NATO nations as regards Elon Musk's X platform and the Rumble video platform?
Well, they're certainly moving. I mean, they hate X. I mean, MI6 in Germany and in Britain, then security services in Germany and France. They hate X and they absolutely hate Rumble, because this is now the one corner, or one of few corners of the internet, where any sort of opposition to their narratives, any sort of critique to their narratives, is actually being published. And obviously in Western Europe right now, X is still available and X is still the number one downloaded news app. But that's going to change very quickly. You're going to see the UK government, you're going to see the governments in Europe move against X in a massive way, I think, because they have completely lost control of the narrative, and Elon Musk's X is pretty much the sole reason for it. It's the most used app in the world. It was the most news for news all along. Now that this is suddenly under the ownership of Elon Musk, who's promoting at least mostly free speech on some things, Now this means that their narratives are later exposed and bare for everyone to see all the failures and the mistakes and the billions of pounds, euros, dollars that have been wasted over the years. So expect big moves from the governments of Western Europe against X and Rumble in the years to come, which I'm sure will trigger a strong backlash from the Trump administration in the form of tariffs or something like that.
Yeah, it's ironic, isn't it? Because we saw pictures of Elon Musk with Netanyahu shortly after October the 7th. And yet what has informed so much of the world, as well as TikTok, it has to be said, have been the pictures uncensored coming from Gaza through X, because the legacy media, CNN, BBC, have continued to act as mouthpieces for the genocide.
Free speech for most things except Palestine. That's the official, not the official policy, but at least the policy that I can infer. So after October 7th, when I remember I was posting videos nonstop of the carnage, the bloodshed, and the destruction in Gaza, the genocide in Gaza. And for the first few weeks, it was millions and millions and millions of impressions, the whole world seeing the clips out of Gaza, the horrifying clips. And then all of a sudden, Elon Musk goes over to Israel, and suddenly the impressions come way down. So even now, I experience it when I'm posting anything about Russia, Ukraine, any clips on that, any clips of whoever speaking about Russia, Ukraine, those tend to do fine and those are uncensored. But I always notice that there is a somewhat suppression on Gaza, on Palestine. And I think that's almost to be expected. I mean, there's a lot of hopium and copium around now with Donald Trump in the White House. But I do think that the policy of being staunchly loyal to Israel and this now the draconian censorship has moved on from Russia, Ukraine, and now you're starting to see it evolve into a draconian censorship apparatus against any sort of anti-genocide, pro-Palestinian commentary. And I think those moves, unfortunately, are only going to become more and more strict as time progresses.
Yeah, Going Underground, of course, was based in London. I've got a headline here from the Dubai Press. Going Underground moved to Dubai. Khalij Times, 50,000, 17 months on, death toll and trauma for Israel's Gaza war. Gulf News. These are big papers here in the UAE. Do you think you'd ever see headlines like that in the British newspapers? In which case, X is really all they have in countries like Britain, France, and Germany to understand the level of killing, the slaughter, and that it is comparable to the Nazis.
Well, that's the thing, that even though there is, I suspect, can't confirm, some suppression of Gaza footage coming out on X. But again, the world saw it. The world saw the genocide through the lens of X and through the fact that it was uncensored. The UK media is absolutely pathetic. There's no journalists in the UK. It's a bunch of stenographers copying government talking points, not really challenging it, not critiquing it. Even when the evidence is laid bare for the world to see, even when independent outlets like Declassified UK can publish story after story about the RAF's role in supporting Israel and the genocide. Not a peep from the UK papers, not a single word of it. Like, they literally, the work's already done. It's already out there. It's like the job has been done for them, and yet they still don't publish it. The UK media has been an accomplice in the genocide, and that's without a doubt. You hear it every single minute on the BBC on when it comes to covering the genocide in Gaza, the Hamas-run health ministry, etc., etc., and you must condemn Hamas and all this kind of thing. The discussion never actually evolves into the obvious, which is that this has been the largest infanticide of children in warfare in modern history and one of the fastest genocides that we've seen. Not a single UK paper has those headlines, because, again, the UK newspapers are all owned by, a group of 6 or 7 billionaires, two of which are brothers. So you're never going to get that in the UK media. There's no point in expecting that from the UK media. But where you can expect it is X and social media. So as the truth starts to come out on that, I mean, it does take a bit, there's a bit of a time delay, but you can guarantee it, these sort of notions of freedom of speech and expression will be tossed in the garbage, basically to suit the situation and control the narrative.
I mean, Going Underground's an independent production sold to a distributor who then puts it out on platforms that are not allowed by Western European NATO nations. What are we getting from negotiations with Google's YouTube? You built up 33 million views, not sure how many subscribers, and during the hysteria of the proxy war on Russia through Ukraine, it got deleted. We're very rare in at least being able to talk to Google's YouTube platform. Lots of people don't know the contacts. Where are we up to getting it back? Because a lot of people are messaging me saying, why can't I see you? Because especially in France, where Rumble is banned, but people finding YouTube an easier platform because YouTube has many more resources because it is richer. It has U.S. government contractors, military contractors owning it.
Oh, it's night and day. I mean, YouTube has over 2 billion monthly users, and Rumble, even though it's a great platform, has under 100 million active users from the last time I checked. So when it comes to Google, if you remember in September of 2024, it must have been September, I think, the State Department put sanctions on RT. So anything that even remotely aired on RT was instantly pulled, the accounts deleted. Like before, all of our episodes that we'd put up over the years, they were basically not viewable to the public, but then they just outright terminated the channel completely. And the specific reason given is these State Department sanctions. So from my inference of that, because I have been trying to get in contact with employees at YouTube and messaging them, and from my understanding, it is the State Department sanctions that are still in place, which don't even, and this is the thing, that even going back to London, there was not one time anyone in Russia picked up the phone and said, you must say this about Russia, Ukraine. It never happened, right? On social media, never once did I get some Russian, like Uncle Vlad, calling me up and saying, you must put out good content for. So no one ever said this to us. We were an independent production company in the UK. We're an independent production company in Dubai. We have voices from all sides. And the most stupid thing to me is what I can remember in the early days of the war is we had a advisor to Putin that I can remember. I can't remember her exact name. And we challenged her on the on the invasion, on the special military operation. And that had gained like 100,000+ views. So this is the thing, that we even interviewed John Bolton after that. So it's like, if you're saying that, oh, Russia's RT are putting out only pro-Russia content and not allowing anything else, why would you censor the one, why would you censor one of the shows on there that's airing voices from the State Department, from challenging like Putin's advisors? It didn't make any sense, and it still doesn't make any sense now. And we're still an independent production company, and we still get on guests from all sides.
Yeah, but that's a totalitarian system, isn't it? And are you not surprised that, because it affected, Alex Jones and Russell Brand and Tucker Carlson and all these different voices as well, why the Americans haven't done more to get it back on YouTube? I mean, as far as I understand it, Brand and some of these people are still saying, even Rogan, I think, saying that there's suspicious elements at Google's YouTube platform, which is why they favor Rumble, a lot of them.
Oh, for sure, for sure. I mean, like, YouTube's algorithms are obviously, these are like made with hundreds of billions of dollars. If there's anything that they don't like, if there's any opinions, any commentators, any shows they don't like, they will suppress it. I mean, leading up to the election, I remember Trump's interview on Joe Rogan. You would enter that into the search engines and that wouldn't even show up, right? So this is still ongoing. What I would say is that the federal government has stepped out of the role of censoring, but the private companies are still going with the censorship industrial complex, and it's, don't get it twisted, it is going as strong as it ever has. I think specifically for RT, or for our independent production, which airs on there, I think that the State Department sanctions are the main thing, because by US law, anything that airs on RT cannot be on YouTube, etc. That's at least what YouTube say. So,
Farhan Ahmed, I'll stop you there. More from Going Underground's head of social media after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with our head of social media, Farhan Ahmed. Farhan, we were talking about the importance of X after it was taken over by Elon Musk. Of course, we had the Twitter files, which explained some of the censorship under its previous regime. How dangerous is it for us at Going Underground and for anyone, any creator, content creator, to rely on an oligarch like Elon Musk? We know his Teslas are going up in smoke. There's a campaign by Legacy Media to vilify him. If something happened to oligarch Musk, what would happen to free speech?
The answer to all your questions is it's not a good situation. Even though we are in a better situation than we were a couple of months ago, trusting one billionaire oligarch and his social media platform is obviously not, it's not a great environment. And God forbid, if anything were to happen to Musk, you can imagine pretty quickly someone new who takes over wouldn't be as much of a free speech absolutist as Elon Musk. So right now, the environment is still not great. We're still relying on oligarch-owned social media. I mean, Elon Musk being one, Zuckerberg being one, who's more overt with his censorship. My question is what is the rest of the world doing? Just waiting for, US free speech platforms to develop. I mean, I don't get why BRICS hasn't yet created a social media platform of its own, to be honest.
Yeah, isn't that the urgent priority? China has Red Note. It has a few other platforms. There's censorship, of course, in China as well. Russia, as far as I understand, bans X, still banning X, even though it gives valuable information about the proxy war in Russia through Ukraine. Why are these BRICS countries, the Global South, so slow, let alone developing social media platforms of any kind? I understand their problems in creating that amount of data storage and data centers. Why are they so slow as regards free speech? What are they afraid of?
Well, I would say this again, and this might nuke a lot of the copium around, but I genuinely don't think that there is a will. I don't think there is a strong enough will to create all kinds of platforms or to, you know, uncensor X, say, for example, in Russia. But mainly, for me, the US has the will. The State Department has the will. All of these big tech oligarchs, they had the will to censor these narratives, to completely create a totalitarian echo chamber within their own countries. I mean, the uniformity of opinion in Western Europe, in the UK, a totalitarian government would dream of the kind of uniformity of opinion. In all honesty, while I've been supportive of BRICS, I've been critical of it in the sense that it is continuously too late to the game. They had a brilliant opportunity under Biden to really ramp up de-dollarization, come up with an alternative currency. They had 4 years, so let alone social media platforms, which there should be by now a BRIC social media platform that's linking, you know, most of the world together. But the problem is that BRICS leaders tend to drag their feet on most things and just tend to react. The US acts, BRICS react. And that's the problem. They don't set the agenda. The US still sets the agenda.
And of course, we are both from Britain. And before anyone thinks of turning off because we're going to mention Keir Starmer, it should be said that Britain does have a nuclear weapon program. Not sure how independent it is, but it is London that's been the center of anti-Trump, pro-continuation of the war in Europe. How long will it take, given the censorship in, say, Britain, and you've been there recently, for the British people to unlearn the lies they've been told in their films, television programs, dramas, poetry, art, fine art, every aspect of their culture in Britain that has taught them that a war on Russia through Ukraine is somehow a good thing, akin to fighting Nazis?
I think I'll be a pension age by the time that happens, because the unfortunate thing about the UK is that it goes in cycles with public opinion. The new thing happens, the new war, the new government telling you what to believe, everyone goes along with it, and then the rest of the world starts to kind of wake up to it, like, no, it's wrong, like, they're wrong about this. And the UK's population eventually, after about 10 years, realizes, oh, we've really fell for that one, better not do that again. Bang, the next thing happens. I mean, I witnessed this growing up in the UK. I mean, one of the earliest memories that I have is the 2003 Iraq War and the Saddam Hussein statue toppling, and, you know, everyone jubilation, yeah, rule Britannia and all this nonsense. And, you know, even in Germany, even in France, even in other populations in Western Europe, they had a contingent of the population that had already, you know, kind of smelled what was cooking. And with Britain, it just takes this, there's this time delay that is longer than any other country. So specifically with Russia, Ukraine, America has woken up and smelled what's cooking. Parts of Europe have woken up and smelled what's cooking. Britain, there's, I mean, people are still, you know, like drinking the Kool-Aid of what the government's saying and are still, I would say, largely still pro-Zelensky and pro this narrative that has been there. But there are elements of the population that I can notify, that I can see, even friends that I speak to, they even realize that they've been sold a bag of goods. They don't quite know exactly what they've been sold. They don't quite know exactly what was wrong with it. But there is a slight realization, I'd say more with urban youth, like people who grew up in the big cities in London, who see the complete dereliction, the complete decaying of the country, and who wonder why is it that we are sitting in a country which had an empire that the sun never sat on, and yet this country is crumbling and we're giving $3 billion a year to Ukraine for the next 100 years. Why? So that question is starting to be asked among segments of the population, but expect another 10, 15 years before any of the UK actually learn their lesson, just like they did in Iraq, Syria, Libya, etc.
Yeah, Tony Blair's Chief of Staff, Jonathan Powell, someone who's been on a platform with me on a television program. He's the National Security Advisor. You're tweeting from the Going Underground account so often about historical perspectives on current events. How important is it for elite authority in Britain and in European, Western European countries to erase history so that the same brainwashing can continue in NATO's European countries? And that's presumably why you feel it's very important to continually tweet about these historical perspectives of Washington hegemonic power and the vassal states of Western Europe.
Oh, 100%. I mean, history may not repeat itself, but it often rhymes. So when you look back at the history, say, for example, like I do lists of U.S. coups in Latin America around the world. I do lists of British involvement in other places in the world. I do on this day kind of posts to signify like major events that have happened in the past that aren't talked about today. And it's, again, because history is rhyming. All of the stuff that happened in the past, the CIA and MI6's sabotage across Africa, killing revolutionary leaders such as Lumumba in Congo, Thomas Sankara, I know the French were really behind that one, the coup against Kwame Nkrumah, if we go to Latin America, the coup against Allende, the list goes on. History repeats itself, and it's a very important thing to remember so that people can draw historical parallels between what's happening now and the instability we're seeing now. And of course, the government and governments have a narrative on what's going on now. So if people see what the actual historical realities were from before and what the governments were saying at the time, they realize that, well, they were lied to then. They might be being lied to now. And that's the most important thing with putting out these historical events and, anything to do with history, really.
And how faked are the numbers we get from accounts like CNN, BBC, and MSNBC, NBC, ABC News, the so-called legacy media? Because the numbers that are watching these outlets are not that great. They still have great followings on X, obviously on Facebook, because that's Zuckerberg pre-pro-Trump era. Mm-hmm. How can we gauge how deeply unpopular the opinions and the propaganda coming from these networks like CNN and BBC are?
Well, one word is engagement. I mean, these all have millions and millions and millions of followers, but the engagement is quite low. I mean, even, you know, posts from Going Underground that I do or posts that you do from your account, I mean, they go way more viral. Like, there's always a couple a week that do. And I think legacy media is dead. I mean, it's pretty obvious now. I mean, even those people, even if we take Bossman at the kebab shop, who, you know, doesn't have the time to, you know, necessarily stay up to date with current affairs and geopolitics, you ask him and you ask him, what do you think of, you know, the mainstream media? And he'll say, oh, they're lying to you. You know, they're lying. Of course they are. They've lied all this time. So I think the only thing really that they're good for is, you know, breaking news, and that's about it. But no one gets their analysis from them anymore. No one watches Joy-Ann Reid on MSNBC recently fired. No one watches Wolf Blitzer. No one watches these people because they all say the same thing. They, like, you might as well, if you want to know what they have to say, just watch a State Department press briefing, because that's where they get their talking points from. There's no trust in them. The trust is declining anyway. So to be honest, whatever you see on social media with their numbers, and they have millions of followers and whatever, a lot of those, of course, I mean, Twitter's been around for years prior. So if you look at their current engagement, it's not exactly great.
And just finally then, that really does suggest there are strange things going on then with the numbers of subscribers. And of course, with RFK Jr.'s banning of pharmaceutical ads, the little advertising revenue these broadcasters have is going to go. I mean, Google seems pretty central to all of this, and Google own YouTube. Why are you surprised? I mean, that J.D. Vance and Donald Trump have not tackled Google, the government contractor, the quasi-government entity of Google, more head-on, given the algorithms that you are perceiving on Google's YouTube platforms, let alone Google searches. I know they criticize also the propaganda encyclopedia, Wikipedia.
Oh, massive. I am surprised by that. I thought that would have been a more central priority, given the fact that Google was central to suppressing Donald Trump. Google was central to suppressing pro-Trump commentators, show hosts, that kind of thing. I mean, Google is the reason all these people had to move to Rumble and to X in the first place. So to me, it's almost a bad sign that so far it's been quite chummy with Google. I mean, Google is the center of the censorship industrial complex. And the truth of the matter is that Google, I would say Zuckerberg has learned, at least, he's at least indicated that he's learning. But Google is stuck in 2016. It's stuck in the Hillary Clinton era of we must censor this, we must censor that. And they don't understand that people are getting really, really irritated by it. I mean, Google's stuck in that era. So is the whole European Union. As you can see, they're censoring everything left, right, and center doesn't go with their narratives. So I would say if Trump wants to cement his agenda and going on into the future, I mean, getting Google back in check and reining in their censorship is the most important thing, because, sure, government censorship can go, that's fine. But if you're not having private corporations stopping their censorship, which controls pretty much, private corporations control the internet, then you're pretty much left in the same place you were in 2016. So, it's a surprise to me.
Fine, Armin. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's it for this special edition of Going Underground. Get in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV, on rumble.com to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you soon.